Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Senate Ag Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow, who joins us to discuss the upcoming Farm Bill and other items on the committee's agenda. But first, here's this week's headlines. USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service is planning to resume publishing its weekly export sales report next Thursday. USDA officials say the report will be much larger than normal because it will have 4 weeks' worth of data that has been held up by problems installing a new reporting system. Next week's report will contain data showing export sales of U.S. shipments of corn, wheat, soybeans, and other commodities from August 12th through September 10th. The Senate Environment and Public Works Committee was split this week on the prospects for a bill to limit EPA's ability to regulate livestock emissions. A bipartisan Senate bill was on the agenda at a Wednesday hearing of the committee, but failed to achieve widespread support among committee Democrats, signaling tough prospects for the legislation in the current Congress. The measure is supported by several farm groups, including the American Farm Bureau Federation, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, and U.S. Cattlemen's Association. And finally, the Agriculture Department released new numbers showing food insecurity in America held relatively steady last year at 10.2%. There was some notable improvement among children. 6.2% of kids in households with children were food insecure last year, which is down from 7.6% in 2020. Food insecurity increased last year among a few groups, including households with no children and women and older people who live alone. As is often the case with Farm Bill development, nutrition programs are expected to be a closely watched part of the upcoming 2023 legislation. Senate Ag Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow says she wants to protect the programs.
We have a broad commitment and a coalition to make sure we have a farm safety net for farmers and a family safety net. And so I intend to keep that commitment broadly. And I also think it's important to note that the update that came literally after 60 years after the Thrifty Food Plan was put in place, it was put in place to analyze how consumers cooked food, shopped for food, what was available and so on. And it was based on a notion that has radically changed, such as spending at least 2 hours a day baking from scratch and all the other kinds of cooking changes and so on. So this is something that should have been updated a long time ago and frankly should be updated regularly so that it's current for families. But it hadn't been. I was glad that we got the update in required in the 2018 Farm Bill. So it was a larger update just because it had never been done before. So now it's on a level playing field here for families who are frankly purchasing an environment where, of course, food costs at the moment are higher, but also we've dramatically changed food in terms of preparing and so on in the last 60 years, that's for sure. So I'm not interested in cutting, you know, food assistance for families just to say we did it. I mean, this is, we want to make sure that in the United States of America, folks can put food on the table for their children and have the benefit of being able to have the healthiest, safest, frankly, still most affordable food in the world.
Mm-hmm. I want to look at a different part of the Farm Bill here, because the recently passed Inflation Reduction Act that you and your colleagues sent to the president last month included a lot of money for conservation programs at the Department of Agriculture. Wondering, there's been a lot of conversation about whether or not this Farm Bill is going to need new money. Does the Inflation Reduction Act solve that problem, or do you still need to push for an additional infusion in this next Farm Bill?
Well, first of all, the Farm Bill always starts out with baseline funding, the same funding as before. And the only way we're able to get sort of any additional help to address issues relates to any issues outside the Farm Bill that have been resolved over the years. For instance, we were able to get dollars to help fix the dairy margin program a few years ago and address requests from the cotton folks, and that allowed us to not have to address it during the Farm Bill, which frankly helped us be able to move forward and address the priorities that we needed. The conservation dollars is going to be the same kind of help to us. We know, for instance, that EQIP has three times more farmers requesting the ability to use EQIP than we have had dollars over the years. Same thing with CSP or the Rural Conservation Partnership and so on. And so being able to address requests and the needs and desires of farmers on conservation, but not having to do it through the baseline farm bill just helps us.
But just to put a finer point on this, is the current baseline adequate, or do you plan to push for new money in this upcoming farm bill?
Well, we never are in a situation, quote, to push for more money. I mean, appropriations never adds money to the baseline. So that's what I'm saying, is every time, every 5 years, we have the farm bill dollars, the baseline in the farm bill. And I've been writing farm bills and involved in a long, long time, and there's never been additional money added other than to address specific needs that have come up through appropriations, sometimes as disaster assistance through appropriations, or as I said, in the last farm bill, addressing really serious issues in dairy margin program or requests from the cotton growers. And so, but there's never that's just not really how it works. We never go and say, we need more dollars in the baseline. We are given X amount of money in the baseline. And then we look at the titles and address priorities. And certainly being able to address the strong desire for additional conservation dollars and do it in a way that doesn't go into the baseline is going to be helpful.
We'll be right back to continue our conversation with Senate Ag Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow right after this.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. With many expecting the upcoming Farm Bill to be the most climate-focused version of the legislation in history, there's been some conversation about potentially tying Climate Smart programs to crop insurance compliance. When we spoke with Senate Ag Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow, we asked for her thoughts on that idea.
Crop insurance is incredibly important, the whole farm safety net, both what we do in the commodity title, crop insurance program, very, very important. And so we'll continue to look at any suggestions that people have on that, but I want to make sure that we have strong titles there. And crop insurance really is about risk management, and conservation is about risk management, very much so. And I think right now, what we should be very focused on is making sure that we can show that USDA voluntary programs and conservation can meet the needs of the moment, both in terms of the climate crisis, which is hitting farmers and ranchers in the face every day. We don't have to talk about severe weather. It's hitting people every day. It was always the riskiest business, and now it's even worse. And so we need to be able to show that in agriculture, we're leaning in and are effective at addressing these issues in terms of keeping carbon in the ground, healthier soils, all of the other strategies around cover crops and so on, as well as methane digesters, managing methane pits and so on, to show that we can do this in a partnership with farmers and ranchers. I believe that's true. And I think now is the time to do it. And with our Growing Climate Solutions Act, which passed 92 to 8 in the Senate, which you don't get that many bills that do that. We want to set up the capacity and integrity of a system where farmers can have confidence that if they are reducing carbon emissions, they can also measure that and go into the carbon markets and create a revenue stream from doing that.
Mm-hmm. In other committee news, I know that a couple of the Republican members of your committee, Chuck Grassley and Deb Fisher, working with some Democratic members outside the committee, John Tesser and Ron Wyden, on some reforms within the livestock industry, some price discovery legislation that they're working on. We've seen your panel hold a hearing on that bill, but we have yet to see further legislative action on that. Should we expect that bill to move? And if so, when?
Well, we have actually brought two bills now dealing with cattle markets out of committee, and they're on the floor. We'll see what happens as we move forward. Right now, there's such limited time at the moment for us to be able to get the commitments to move them forward. But the cattle markets bill that I've been working with Senators Grassley and Fisher, as you mentioned, the other members as well. And we also have one dealing with a competition investigator in USDA related to competition. And so both of those are bills that I would love to see move forward in some way. It's not clear at this point how much it would take, time it would take on the floor, because there is a real division, particularly among Republican colleagues on the cattle markets bill. So I'll work with Senator Bozeman, and he and I, 90% of the time, are in the same place. We are in different places on this one, but we are very respectful of each other moving forward on fair process, and we'll have to see whether or not, you know, we can find a path forward.
Those two pieces of legislation, would you be open to considering them in a farm bill context if they're not passed in this Congress?
Well, I think at this point, any member can certainly bring up those policies, and we can certainly, you know, discuss it and see whether or not that is something that ought to be considered. Any member of the committee can raise issues, and I'm certain that because of the passionate feelings from colleagues, particularly Senator Grassley, Senator Fisher, Senator Hyde-Smith, and others, that that they certainly will want to raise it in a number of contexts if it doesn't move forward.
Mm-hmm. Earlier this week, you are also a member of the Senate Finance Committee, and that panel considered Doug McCaleb at the U.S. Trade Representative, reported his nomination favorably out of committee. But the Senate Ag Committee also has some looming nominations from the Biden administration, among them, namely Alexis Taylor, to be USDA's Trade Undersecretary. Wondering, should we expect to see committee action on those nominations anytime soon?
Yes, we will be moving forward. You know, it's so important that we have open markets. And that's something I've been pushing for since the beginning, the USTR ag negotiator. You know, I'm sorry we haven't had somebody sooner, but I think Doug's going to do a great job. I think Alexis Taylor also will do a great job. She's moving through her interviews. We have her paperwork. You know, there's a whole process we have to do, but we will be moving her forward very shortly.
Senator, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel. But first, our Andrew Hunneke takes a look at the most recent farm income figures in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA's most recent income forecast projects farm sector profits will remain above average in 2022. That's welcome news for farmers and ranchers, because rising input costs have also been eating into profit margins. This chart from the USDA shows the U.S. net farm income and net cash farm income, adjusted for inflation from 2002 to the forecasted totals for 2022. Net cash farm income is the green line. It's based on cash receipts from farming, plus government payments and other farm-related income, minus cash expenses. Net cash farm income is forecast at $168.5 billion in 2022. That's an increase of more than $22 billion from last year, due largely to increases in many commodity prices. The projected total would put net farm income at its highest level since 2012 after being adjusted for inflation. Net farm income, the blue line, is a broader measure of profits after expenses from production in the current year. It's forecast at $147 billion in 2022. Last year's net farm income was at historic highs when adjusted for inflation, but this year's figure is about $1 billion less, still 42% above the 20-year average. Cash receipts from the sale of agricultural commodities and sales of animal and animal products are also all projected to increase. Government payments are pulling projections down and are forecast to drop by about $12.8 billion this year. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Honecke.
Every morning, American corn farmers roll their sleeves up and start the work of growing a better future, one bushel at a time with America's crop. A better future made possible by their unmatched sustainability practices and the extraordinary benefits and uses of corn throughout the global economy. And the National Corn Growers Association proudly supports and advocates for all they do, year in and year out.
At Clean Fuels Alliance America, we're working toward a future of clean energy now that will make our members proud. We serve as the clean fuels industry's primary organization for technical, environmental, and quality assurance programs, and are the strongest voice for its advocacy, communications, and market development. With industry-leading programs and incentives, Clean Fuels Alliance America is actively moving the clean fuels industry forward toward a brighter future.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we're excited to be joined by a panel discussion to continue our dialogue on the upcoming Farm Bill. Really excited to hear the insights that we're going to collect here from Bruce Knight at Strategic Conservation Solutions, Tara Smith at Michael Torrey Associates, and Robert Gunther at the International Fresh Produce Association. Appreciate all of you taking the time to join us. Tara, I want to go to you first, because within the last month or so, we've seen some folks on the Republican Study Committee come out with a budget that, to put it kindly, includes some big cuts to Farm Bill programs. Wondering your thoughts on whether or not, should the Republicans be successful in their efforts to take back the House, whether or not you think that is going to cause some issues with the rank and file members, and whether or not that's giving you any concern on whether or not they can support a Farm Bill.
Yeah, well, I think it's important to remember that this isn't a new proposal. This is something we've seen out of members of the Republican Party, whether it's the Republican Study Committee or others in past farm bills. You might remember in 2018, we had an amendment on the floor by Congressman McClintock that was very similar to the farm program cuts that were proposed in the RSC budget. It got 34 votes. So am I worried? I think we need to be sure we're doing our due diligence. But at the end of the day, I think we've seen time and again that there isn't really broad congressional support for completely undermining the farm programs that we have today.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Bruce, let's talk about some of the supports that folks are going to be seeking, especially in the wake of the Inflation Reduction Act. The passage of that legislation infuses a lot of money into conservation programs at the Department of Agriculture, including many programs that are dealing with some drastic oversubscription issues. Wondering, do you think the amount of money that we're seeing in the Inflation Reduction Act is going to sufficiently address those oversubscription issues, or is the Farm Bill going to need to deal with this issue as well?
I believe this will still be a Farm Bill issue when we get to it. What I've seen over the years, EQIP, the Conservation Security Program, each hover around a oversubscription rate of turning away three or four contracts for every contract that is accepted. I think that will continue even under the IRA. There are certain things that the agency is going to have to do. They've got to be more aggressive about working with mainstream commercial farm operations in order to be able to invest all of that money. They need to look seriously at waiving the AGI and payment limits that restrict specialty crops, many integrated livestock operations from fully subscribing to these programs as well. But this will still be a Farm Bill issue when we get to the Farm Bill.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Robert, obviously we're at a point in time now where the nation's farm groups are either honing, fine-tuning, whatever verbiage you'd like to use, but really taking a fine-tooth comb to those Farm Bill priorities and what their specific ask will be to Capitol Hill. Wondering what we should expect the produce industry to be looking for out of this Farm Bill that might kind of separate it a little bit from some of the requests that we might see out of the row crop community.
Well, thanks, Spencer. Yeah, I think what you're going to see is a pretty diverse set of recommendations. We have been at this now, gosh, since probably the 2002 Farm Bill, really trying to work with all of our other interested stakeholders in the Farm Bill world to work on programs that help benefit the competitiveness of fruits and vegetables, specialty crops, fresh produce, all the above. I think this year we are seeing more creative, more diverse set of recommendations coming out of the industry. Our goal is to have those ready in the next couple months. And I think they range, you know, from, you know, risk management tools to conservation programs, to trade, to all of the things that, you know, our industry really relies on to be competitive in this marketplace, both domestically and internationally.
Because I suppose that one of your biggest legislative issues is going to be labor, which is something that we won't necessarily see addressed in the context of the Farm Bill. Am I right or am I wrong on that?
In terms of the direct correlation with labor, I would say you're exactly right. Unfortunately, the Farm Bill has never really covered that issue. But I think some tools and technologies potentially that we can put into the Farm Bill that will help address some of the labor challenges we have. Those are some of the different ideas that we're working on right now to figure out if there's room in this new Farm Bill to address some of these issues, whether it's mechanization, automation, other ways that we can address some of the labor challenges we have had for decades now.
We'll be right back to continue our Farm Bill conversation with this week's panel right after this.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Welcome back. The nation's farm groups are offering similar thoughts on the idea of whether or not to tie climate smart practices to crop insurance compliance. Bruce Knight with Strategic Conservation Solutions says the conservation community does not have a unanimous opinion on the issue.
That's going to get a very mixed reaction. I think the science and effort is not sufficient today, nor the desire to make that linkage. Crop insurance and conservation compliance were relinked a couple of farm bills ago. That's been highly effective in building a broader coalition of support around crop insurance. But at this point in time, it makes the most sense to pursue climate smart and climate change activities on a voluntary basis. We're seeing a great deal of support in the climate smart grant proposal, about $1 billion that was offered by the administration. You see a lot of interest in doing that on a voluntary action. With the Inflation Reduction Act, you see additional resources going into conservation that'll be targeted towards climate smart activity. So there's probably adequate resources right now to support voluntary actions on climate change that farmers and ranchers who want to do it will be more than willing to do it, and not a need for that sort of linkage at present.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose if we're going to have this conversation, we need to bring Tara into the fold on it and just kind of have you maybe at a 30,000 foot view for those that might not be familiar with the issue. Can you just kind of walk us through what the crop insurance community's concerns are with this climate smart linkage?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, we've sort of had discussions in the past about how crop insurance hinders farmers from undertaking conservation practices or climate smart ag practices. I think we've seen some more recent studies here in the last couple of years that have actually shown that that isn't the case. Crop insurance isn't standing in the way of farmers adopting those climate smart ag practices. And we want to be sure that that continues to be true. As climate smart ag progresses, we need to be sure that crop insurance and the good farming practices that are required for crop insurance policies keep up with conservation practices and keep up with what's going on in the countryside. So that's going to be an important piece of it. But at the end of the day, the piece that's really important for the crop insurance industry is making sure that those policies remain actuarially sound. And so if there are linkages between climate smart ag practices and crop insurance, as long as there's data to support the fact that those climate smart ag practices actually reduce risk on the farm, then that's fantastic. Then we're very supportive of creating those linkages. It just needs to be done in a way that's supported by data and is actuarially sound, because that's really the underlying integrity of the entire crop insurance program.
And quickly, Tara, would love to get your thoughts on another subject. Of course, a lot of the things that we're discussing about are going to cost money. The Farm Bill, not exactly a bottomless pit of it. Wondering your thoughts on whether or not you expect congressional leaders, Republicans and Democrats, House and Senate, to be able to come to some kind of an agreement on whether or not to push for additional funding in this upcoming bill?
I mean, I think we're certainly going to see those pushes. We're going to see them from those pushes from different commodity organizations. We're going to see it from several members of Congress who have already said that they're going to make that a priority in this farm bill. I think that that's going to require a discussion about the limited pot of money that we have and where those money should be spent. And keep in mind, again, those are discussions that we have every farm bill. Every farm bill, there are discussions about should we move money from one title to another title? Should we be cutting funding for a certain program? Should we be adding money to certain programs? So that's just part of the process of writing a farm bill. I think whether or not they can come to an agreement on it will depend in large part on, you know, who we see with gavels, how much of a margin they have to work with within their own delegations for those margins for votes for farm bills. And whether or not there can be some compromises reached to move some money around. Certainly finding new money, they've done it before. We did it back in the 2008 Farm Bill. I don't know how many people we had around that conference table, 50 some odd people around that conference table. And they went and got money from the Finance and Ways and Means Committee to plus up some of these programs, but that's really tough to do. And there are a lot of challenges around doing things like that. So it really comes down to where can you shift money within the Farm Bill titles?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I want to wrap things up with you here, Robert, and I know I'm not telling you anything that you don't already know when I say this, but a lot of your members are dealing with drought in the areas where they grow some of their produce. Wondering how will we expect to see the weather concerns that your members are dealing with now and really over the last couple of years deal with impact the Farm Bill priorities that your organization will bring to the table?
It's a tough question. You know, again, that's something where potentially the Farm Bill could be beneficial, whether it's through conservation programs. But, you know, when you're dealing with 110, 115, 116 degree weather like it has been this week out in California and other places out west, it's something that we're going to continue to have to build on. I still believe, and I know many others believe, we have to continue to invest in infrastructure, whether that's water conveyance infrastructure, whether that's water availability infrastructure in terms of additional resources of water. But it's been a tough number of years now that they're being pushed to the edge in terms of deciding, you know, kind of what they're going to be planning, what types of commodities they're going to be planning. It's people getting laid off. We've just heard a number of groups or companies who have said, you know, in terms of because of all this, you know, having to lay people off because they just don't have the commodity mix that they need. But yeah, I think really it comes down to really continuing to see infrastructure investment out west and better, you know, trying to balance out the needs of the agriculture community, the urban community, and the conservation and environmental community, you know, resources that are needed to protect. And that's never an easy balance to try and balance out those three things.
Well, obviously 2023 is going to be an extremely consequential year as Congress looks to update that Farm Bill, something we're going to be keeping a very close eye on, as will the folks that have joined us here on this panel. That's going to be taking up a lot of everyone's time here over the course of that next year and maybe longer. We'll have to stay tuned on that. But for now, appreciate all of you joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke checks in with a question from the field.
In this week's From the Field, a Minnesota corn and soybean grower wants to know more about the additional infrastructure spending for ethanol that was announced by the USDA.
Good morning from the Farm Progress Show. I'm Harold Woolley, a corn and soybean grower from Medillia, Minnesota. My question for you today is, how are the additional dollars that USDA has announced for ethanol infrastructure going to affect the infrastructure out in the country? What is the timing and what results can we expect to see from these additional dollars?
Thanks for the question, Harold. USDA is providing $100 million in grants through the Higher Blends Infrastructure Incentive Program. Interested parties have until November 21st to apply. Transportation fueling facilities, including fueling stations and convenience stores, are allowed to apply, as well as fuel distribution facilities such as terminal operations and depots. The program aims to market higher blends of ethanol and biodiesel by sharing the costs to build and retrofit biofuel-related infrastructure, such as pumps, dispensers, and storage tanks. And keep in mind, the new funding is separate from the $500 million earmarked for biofuel infrastructure in the Inflation Reduction Act. If you'd like to see your question answered on the show, send an email to newsmakers@agripulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at agripulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. A Senate Ag Subcommittee will hold a hearing on Tuesday on the current efforts and potential opportunities for food as medicine. And on Thursday, a House Ag Subcommittee will hold a joint hearing with a Transportation and Infrastructure Subcommittee on rail issues. National Farmers Union members from across the country will meet in Washington, D.C. Sunday through Wednesday for their annual fly-in. And as always, keep an eye on AgriPulse.com for the latest farm policy news in Washington and across the country. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.